Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Take 193 of the Introduction to Free for All Friday Marriage Anniversary Special. Go to bed. Stop interrupting us. I'm glad that you're here. Saying that to both our audience and my wife. It is Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. In fact, Laura's not even going to talk. I'm just going to ramble incessantly.
I would really appreciate
for 90 minutes. I will do the filibuster like Patton Oswalt on Community did several years ago. And drone on and on. Laura will laugh in the background. And thank you all. Thank you all. Have a blessed weekend. Boom. Monday and Wednesday, we talk apologetics and theology. But Friday, we talk about whatever I want to talk about. And today, we are celebrating the fact that back in May was our 10th wedding anniversary. So I asked our patrons to send us some questions. And let's jump right into them, my dear. The first one is, for Laura, which of Trent's books is Laura's favorite?
Probably The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Of course, it's a great book. Except that's more...
I had said Devin Rose's Lionheart Catholic for the first 100 takes, and I just couldn't do it anymore.
It's a good book. I like that he talks about how he failed living on a homestead. If I tried to do a homestead, it would be... I killed our lawn. I still feel so bad.
Lionheart Catholic? I quote that book to a lot of people, actually. Anyone who wants to homestead, I'm like, you should read Lionheart Catholic.
If I can't keep a lawn alive, how could I run a farm? I'm sorry, distributists. I just can't do totally. It, okay? I can't do it. I kill succulents. Nothing can kill them. All righty. Here's the next one.
Oh, wait, Seth. But my favorite book, actually.
You don't have a favorite book. I know you just humor me.
No, I love all of your books. I really do love all of your books. Love? Probably Case for Catholicism, because you worked really hard on it.
I love that book, too. It was fun to go deeper on a subject. I know it was tense in our marriage. I sent the file off right as you were giving birth to Thomas.
Yeah, still not bitter, but let's fight about that.
Well, you can take that up with Mark Brumley at Ignatius. Thanks, Mark, for publishing my book. I'm really grateful. Laura's grateful as well. Yeah. I know it's helped a lot of people. I went to Capturing Christianity conference a few years ago, and a lot of Protestants came up to me, and I signed that book for them. And it was...
A few of my friends have converted through that book. Yeah. Every time someone asks me that, I give a different answer. So
nice.
I just rotate. You've written so many books that I can change the answer every single time someone asks me that question.
Totally. What made you choose homeschooling?
I really didn't choose homeschooling. It chose me because during 2020 was the first year of homeschooling and school shut down. So really I was thrown into homeschooling. We didn't have any other options. Then we decided it was the best option for our kids. Homeschooling is something that I do because I think it's best for our children, not because I absolutely love it. I have my days that I love it, but more days than not, it ends with me at confession at Good Shepherd Catholic Community. Thanks, Brother Zach.
I know what you're confessing. I'm sure you're just like...
I loved too much.
Total. I mean, like Pope John Paul II went to confession every week, so you shouldn't feel bad going every week.
Totally.
Like, I was like, what does he confess? Like, I took an extra dinner roll at dinner. I am so sorry.
One time a priest told me, you confess more in 3 days than most people do in 6 months. I'm like, well, a righteous man sins 7 times a day, and I am not righteous.
Right.
I should have at least 8 sins per day, Father.
Who doesn't? So I think homeschooling works well for our kids, and mostly I'm just sick of the LGBTQIA2SB123 dabba dabba do it at public schools, government schools, and also the incompetence and just the kids there, the little punks. If your kids go to public school, I'm not saying they're little punks. Maybe they are. You're like, yeah, they are. But like, I don't want Matt to go to school like everybody's on an iPad and an iPhone, and they're not very nice kiddos nowadays. They're not. I don't know. So I like the homeschooling environment for them, and I think it
just depends. I think it's like naive to say just because you homeschool, you're going to have a good kid. I think, you know, you have to be intentional no matter what method of schooling you choose. And I think people who choose public schooling who are Catholic don't do so lightly. But I will say it's probably not we're able to homeschool at this time. So that is truly a gift.
All right, here is the next question. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit here. Hi, Trent. I'm in law school, and the way you structure your arguments and debates and rebuttals is very similar to how a lawyer does. Did you ever consider going to law school in your younger days? Yes. So when I was dating Laura, I moved to Albuquerque. I was making, I think, like $600 a month.
12.
It was 1200. Yeah, 12. But I spent 600 on rent. So I spent half my income on rent and then got by every day with one frozen burrito. I would eat it around noon and that was it.
He weighed 130 pounds when we got married. Me too.
You know what's sad? I'm never going to have that pre-marriage body back again.
Totally. Yeah. But, die to it.
No, I mean, it is hard in marriage. It's something for a man to mourn. Like, I'm never going to be that trim 130 pounds again. And, you know, but that's something I've come to grips with. So I thought, okay, I want to marry Laura. I need a job. What am I going to do? Well, I could be a lawyer. That's a job. And so I signed up for the LSAT and I was ready to take it. And then I realized this is a terrible idea. I just want to be a lawyer for money or just for a job. And I was reading online and they said that's a terrible reason to become a lawyer. And funny enough, now I've reconnected with friends who went to law school and a lot of them graduated. They had a ton of debt and they were barely making like 50 or 60,000 a year. Not very much for a lawyer. So, I mean, it's hard. You have to take out a lot of debt for law school. I like being an apologist because I feel like I get to do a lot of the law school stuff, like the attorney stuff, but I do arguments for God and for the faith. But yeah, I mean, it's something I was interested in when I was younger, and I don't know, it's been fun to kind of incorporate that into the work I do now.
Yeah, I consider law also. That's why when I went to Franciscan, I studied political science.
They did a little movie about you, right? No, they did a movie about you in law school, like that Legally Blonde movie.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was me. Yeah, and right. I think that was the same year that you wrote Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, actually. So.
Basically the same thing. You're a dead ringer for Reese Witherspoon. I object.
I object. Totally.
You bet I can quote Legally Blonde. I can quote Shakespeare. I can quote Legally Blonde. It's all rattled around in my noggin.
Bend and snap.
Right. Here's the next one. If your spouse was a cartoon character, who would they be?
Probably the Jew kangaroo.
No, like a real one. Can you think of
you
me?
You wish you were Batman. Okay, probably you'd be Batman.
I'm Batman.
Who would you be? I'd say you'd be the Flash, probably, because you're nerdy.
It doesn't have to be a superhero. It's just a cartoon character.
Oh, a cartoon character. Oh, gosh. I don't know.
You want to know what people have said that I was before?
Who?
They said that I was the squirrel from The Sword and the Stone.
Who said that?
I don't know. Just like friends in high school.
It's absolutely not a compliment. They are not your friends.
I guess. I think you'd be
like Merlin, or is there another squirrel?
No, Arthur, you know, the old Sword and the Stone cartoon.
Yeah, of course.
He gets turned into a little squirrel.
Oh.
And the other lady squirrel falls in love with him, and he turns back into a boy, and she's all sad.
Oh.
Just like what happened to us. I don't know what that would mean.
Squirrely? I don't know.
You would be the Powerpuff Girls.
The Powerpuff Girls? Yeah, for sure. Me and my sisters were obsessed with the Powerpuff Girls because there are three of us. Yeah. And we watched every Saturday morning.
Yeah. So, all right. That's a good one. How about, here's one. Congrats on your wedding anniversary. I was happy to see your family at the prayer memorial marking the closing of Dallas's former late-term abortion facility. Thank you for all you've done for life.
Story about that, actually. I grew up in New Mexico, and that's where Curtis Boyd's clinic is. I grew up in Las Cruces, but I went to nursing school in Albuquerque, and Curtis Boyd has a late-term abortion clinic there. And so we would pray at it very, very often because I worked for a pro-life center there. And so then I went here to the closing of his clinic here, and because they shut it down in Texas,
right,
with their wonderful pro-life laws. And so I cried and I got really, really emotional seeing, because I've prayed like so many hours and so many people have prayed to see his clinic shut down. And it was such a great closing to see.
Yeah, finally,
with the connection,
right,
to Curtis Boyd. I won't even call him doctor, but yeah.
I won't even call him Curtis. Totally. I have a friend named Curtis and he's a nice guy. You besmirched the name Curtis.
Curtis is a nice guy.
He is nice.
He would never kill any babies. Right. But yeah. It was such a beautiful, you know, experience. Yeah. So,
well, here's the question that was just the preface to it.
Oh, sorry.
What are some of your favorite creative, low budget date night ideas? I'm going to tell you my favorite one we did recently that was low budget and was just fun was when you and I went to boxing.
Oh, that was not very fun for me. You punched me in the face.
You hit me in the head multiple times.
Yeah, but I do that every night. We don't need to go out for that.
That's true. Finally, you're just wearing gloves this time.
Totally.
I thought it was fun, and we got to. It was fun to exercise. So normally, you've been exercising like your whole life. You did cross country. Like, you're a more fit person than me. But it's so funny because you're super fit with a particular exercise and sport, cross country running. And then it was fun just to do a boxing class, which is basically half boxing and then half calisthenics and aerobics.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, you have a great stamina for that. It was interesting to see. Yeah, I thought that I'd be able to beat you on a lot of the stuff, and I was not. It was actually pretty humiliating.
It was not humiliating. Well, it's just interesting.
What a date night.
Totally. No, it's fun to like work out and exercise and try a bunch of different, because we go on walks and stuff. But to make a coach tell you, okay, go and do the duck walk or stop and do 10 push-ups.
Yeah, that was fun. It was good for my brain. I actually thought that my push-ups were super BA. Like, I thought I was doing a great job. Yeah. And then the coach came over. We were supposed to do 10 push-ups. And he came over and he's like, you just do three. You can only do three.
You're like doing one of the kid push-ups.
I thought I was doing really well.
It's hard. If you only focus on walking and lower body, if you neglect the upper body, suddenly it's like, what has been something unexpected you found difficult about marriage and an unexpected joyful thing?
Wait, but the date night.
What about the date night? That was one. Oh, do you have another
one? My date night. No, yeah. I feel like date nights are kind of overrated. I realize that that's like an unpopular position to hold, but I feel like people should stop guilting everybody to do date nights.
Yeah.
Like if you're able to do them, I think they're necessary for some couples, but we don't go on a lot of dates.
We put them to bed / drug them with melatonin and then we put on a movie, probably like 21 Jump Street for like the eighth time. So anyway, I'm just going to talk quickly as if there was a jump cut here you didn't see. Date night. That was a good question. Let's be moving on. Unexpected, difficult thing in marriage. Not sleeping. I really didn't think about it that much.
We're so tired. I know.
And we still are. Our kids aren't infants anymore, and they still get up a lot. I love them, but they get up all the time.
Yeah.
Or something happens, and you're dad, and you have to go deal with it. Like,
There was a thunderstorm.
And there's a thunderstorm, and not just that, but it's like, I got to check if there's a leak. I think there's a leak. Or, oh, I got to move the car in because there might be hail. And before, like, when you're a kid, it's like, ooh, thunder. Like, oh, my dad's up. He'll take care of whatever that is. Now that's me, and I have to do that stuff. So
yeah,
lack of sleep.
How hard sleep deprivation can be.
But being with the kids is unexpectedly joyful. I think the most joyful thing we do with the kids are dance parties. We turn it on the speaker and they just love rocking out to that. Watching a 2-year-old dance, it just looks like a 2-year-old dancing. It looks like a 75-year-old from 1943, not a 75-year-old today. I'm talking about somebody who was 75 in 1943, like somebody who was born right after the Civil War. And they're like trying to do the Charleston and they're just like shimmying with their elbows flared out and bouncing and bopping around.
You look like Charlie Brown.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. But that's watching a 2-year-old do that is.
I always know when dance parties go too far because I start yelling. Like when the kids are an absolute mess and they turn it into like a boxing match with one another or things are flying because the music's too loud. I'm like, that's it. Turn off Flames right now.
Oh, yeah, we're doing musicals now when they sing the musical. So, I mean, so that's been an unexpected joy, just singing and dancing with the kid and just having fun like that. Or just little things that come up, like there'll be snow and you take them, you go sledding by the house. And I think it's fun. Okay, here's another one. Can you give us some of the best and worst ideas, trends, or things you've seen at Catholic conferences? What works best and what should be avoided? Well, oh, you've had to sit through a few that you didn't like. Definitely not the Catholic Answers Conference.
Totally.
Right?
I am not even going to say anything.
No, you can say. I don't think Chris is going to mind. I'm going to be honest. I think the biggest thing a Catholic conference can do wrong is booking somebody because of their name or some other reason, and they're not a good speaker. It's a bare minimum at a conference. The person giving the talk should be a good pub. I mean, it is amazing to me at some conferences. You have people come. There will be 1,000 people at the conference, and the speaker is bad. It's just a boring speaker. It's amazing. People spend a lot of money to go to these things. And there's so many people out there who speak. Well, I don't know. Do you think just a lot, I don't know, maybe a lot of people aren't as good speakers? I don't know.
I think overly corny things also, like I've seen some really like corny play reproductions at conferences, or like one time I walked in and there was just like a pro-life thing, and they just had like creepy baby dolls all set up, and that was weird.
That's like that island off of Mexico of all the baby dolls. It's like the ghost island, but that's another free for all Friday.
I'd say most conferences that I have gone to actually are fairly good. I think so expensive that in order to get a fair amount of people that you have to have a decent reach and people have to trust you to come. So.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I think that a lot of them are really good that I've been to. I think sometimes it isn't good when the organizers draw things out or it's just not moving very quickly.
Too much gap time.
It's like, all right,
the talks are too long.
Yeah, the talk is done and we're just milling about. Like, let's just get to the next talk. Or talks are
so true.
Talks are too long. It's like we're going to do an hour talk, 5-minute break, and another hour talk. I honestly think people can't pay attention after 30 minutes.
No.
I personally don't like giving talks longer than 30 minutes.
In fact, I'm bored right now.
Totally.
Let's wrap this up.
It has been 16 minutes of recording and you cannot.
It feels longer, actually.
Yeah. So I like conferences where, and Focus, not Catholic Answers Focus, but Fellowship of Catholic University Students, Focus would do conferences where it's a block, like 1 hour, but there's three speakers and they each talk for 15 or 20 minutes.
That's great. Catholic students, they can't handle longer, probably.
Totally. Totally. Let's see here. Here's our, I'll do two more questions. So how old were you when you started doing apologetics? What was your first job in the field? Is a theology degree necessary? Well, I started doing apologetics, honestly, during my conversion. So when I first entered into the church, I was 16. I had to do apologetics to convince myself. So that started when I was about 16, 17. My first job in the field would probably be working for Arizona Right to Life. I did pro-life speaking, kind of like being a pro-life apologist. And then I did pro-life stuff for the Diocese of Phoenix. So that was, but my first, otherwise Catholic apologetics was always a hobby. And I don't know, Laura, remember when we were, you know, dating and engaged, like I would work and then at night I would work on my apologetic stuff. And
yeah, you wanted to start your own Catholic organization and then you found out that Catholic Answers was hiring.
Yeah, I was going to start Answers for Catholics.
Totally.
No one's ever thought of it before. Answers for Catholics. And then Catholic Answers wanted to bring me on board and it was just it was very providential and I still feel very blessed by that. Is a theology degree necessary? It's not necessary. Honestly, it's not really necessary anymore. I don't know.
Kind of. Yeah, I would say probably.
Here's what's hard about it. For credentialing. It really is just for credentialing. I know a lot of people who are really great apologists who don't have theology degrees. But if you want to get booked to speak at a conference, if you want to work at a diocese, if you want to do a lot of different things, you really need that degree. But the thing is, there are nearly everyone who has a graduate degree in theology would not be a good apologist. They're two different things. So I know a lot of people who are great theologians, but they would be not very good apologists. They're not good at defending the faith and argument against critics. That's just not their expertise. So I think it's good just to get it. Just don't go into debt. Do an online program. Learn from the program. But for an apologist, myself, Jimmy Akin, Joe Heschmeyer, most of what we know does not come from formal education. It comes from self-education. You cannot be someone who does apologetics as like a ministry, like doing your own full-time ministry or working for someone. You can't do that if your only learning comes from a theology program. You have to be somebody who's willing to be a lifelong learner that always picks up a book and is reading and learning something or watching a YouTube video where I get Free For All Friday ideas. Shameless, I know.
I also feel like you can be like a specialist in an area of apologetics that you have your degree in. Like my dad has his PhD in chemistry. So then he speaks a lot about like science and God. Or like when I was a nurse, I could speak on pro-life issues in regard to nursing or, you know. So you can, like, if you're an accountant, you can speak on like what the church's stance is on certain monetary issues or, you know what I mean?
Right.
So like if you wanted to be an apologist based in one specific niche, I don't think that that's a bad thing either.
No, I think in the future, that's where we're going to get more people focusing on one particular thing. Last question. How do you and your wife navigate, identify traditional gender roles, representing fences that should remain standing versus ones that should be taken down? So how do we do that? I basically cook and clean and no. Laura doesn't want me to clean. I make things dirtier when I try to clean. So I'm like, I'm not even going to touch it.
No, melancholics are very, weirdly organized. I'm like, why is this battery in here with this hair tie and this plastic bag?
That's my
I know exactly
that's
where
my battery hair tie plastic bag drawer. It's in the mental map I have of my home. Where I also keep card number 382 from my Koine Greek collection. It goes right there. But I can still find the stuff. I know what's going on. I don't know. I think we just divide up things. I think, though, for more domestic...
No, I think we've grown into that.
We've grown into that. But the domestic and maternal roles, I feel like you naturally gravitate towards, especially when it comes to, like, day-to-day with the kids, like, their meals or a lot of the things that they have to do.
I am not a terrific homemaker. I am not a great cook. I don't enjoy cooking. I enjoy cleaning.
I love your cooking.
We had hot dogs for dinner. And my kid had a hot dog for lunch.
But here's
that's
the thing.
Three hot dogs.
I grew up with hot dog sandwiches. So my parents, like, we would buy hot dogs. But we couldn't afford buns. We couldn't buy bread and buns. So we just bought bread, and then we would cut up the hot dogs into little slices, and you'd have a hot dog sandwich. And you would eat that.
And now I have irritable bowel syndrome.
For the cheapo hot dogs we bought in like 1992.
I have been constipated for 20 years.
Oh, man. But so, Noah, you do them on the buns. You do a great job. I think you're a good homemaker. You put the hot dog in the hair. You put the hot dog in a bun, corn pop. Yeah. No joke. See, I can do Joe Biden too. And not just you do it in your episodes. No, but cooking though, yeah, I can't cook to save my life.
That makes me feel better. At least you're not like a foodie with particular tastes.
I'm proud of myself when I use the oven. Like when I heat up French fries in the oven instead of the microwave, I'm like, I'm a gourmet.
Ew, French fries in the microwave. Those are like what I feed to John Paul and he doesn't know better. He's all bug. I'm like, that's not a worm. That's a fry. Eat it, kid.
So, no, but I think with the gender roles, like you do a lot of the nurturing and the kid raising. And I mean, I work, but also it's kind of like they have those videos like if moms were paid what they were worth. They would make $280,000 a year because a mom is it's like CEO, babysitter, chef.
Chef? What chef. The hell kind of restaurant did I go to?
And you have like all these things like moms. And moms do a lot, and that should be taken into account. But I want to be like, when people have those articles, like if moms are paid what they were worth, they would make all of this. And I'm like, what about dads are paid what they're worth? Like
plumber.
We don't just sit on our behinds and we get home from work. Maybe some dads do, but yeah, like what are the jobs we do? Plumber, mechanic,
counselor,
security detail. Like if something
security
weird.
Security detail.
At two in the morning.
That's
when you,
fair.
I have been out once and you heard a weird scream outside and you had me come home and it was late.
I did. I don't want to talk about it. I just got goosebumps.
Well, I'm going to talk about it because I was on my way to go to a hip-hop spectacular. You didn't want to... I invited you to
cheap date nights. We don't have any because Trent likes to go out by himself.
I wanted you to go with me, but you said 11 p.m. How can an event start at 11?
How can an event start at 11? I'll say it again. That is too late.
I know. You're like, I'm going to bed.
I don't do anything at 11.
And then I started and you called me like, I heard some things. And I turned around and came back and just kept an eye and waited and all that. But no, I think that there are natural roles men and women fall into, but you just don't get worked up as to who should be doing what. There, you'll find a natural rhythm and, you know, see what works best for your family. Just make sure that
I think
it's good for the family and the kids.
I think people confuse roles with chores and they're
true.
Two very different things. Like if whoever does the dishes, that is not a role, that's a chore. So,
right. It's not really masculine or feminine. Like I like putting the dishes away at night and my favorite is when I can start the dishwasher at like 7 and then everyone's gone to bed and I hear the little ding and then if I can put them away before we go to bed.
It is such a service.
Waking up to that fresh and open dishwasher, it is just delightful.
It really is a nice start to my day.
You hit the ground running with kids. So.
When I went to Honduras, it was a very like machismo culture. That's how they described it. And
did you know Honduras is Spanish for machismo?
Right. No, I'm pretty sure it means a whale's.
You're terrible. Go on.
That was Anchorman. But anyway, yeah. So the women would do everything. And I remember one couple, though, that was getting married. The man did the woman's dishes every night just as a way to like serve her. And he like his family was basically like, you cannot marry this woman who lets you do her dishes for her. Like it's a sign that she's not going to work in marriage. Whereas really he was just doing it to serve her basically. And it was just such a beautiful thing though to watch. It wasn't like they were trying to take down traditional gender roles or anything like that. He was just trying to help her.
Serve each other. I don't like when some people say that only women should vacuum or do dishes and men should do only the manly things like fixing the dishwasher or building a treehouse. And for me, I'm like, wait a minute. So only the woman should do the ones that happen regularly on a daily basis. And men are like, oh, better build a treehouse, or hey, oh, something broke. I better go do something.
Like, to be honest, I do most of the chores, but I just.
This is true.
Like, but when you do things like unload the dishwasher and stuff, it's really
most of the chores because like a lot of the stuff you take care of is when I'm at work.
I am home all day. Yeah exactly. And I genuinely enjoy it.
So then when I'm at home, honestly, here's the thing. I stink at cleaning. I'm not good at cleaning, but I'm good at decluttering. Like if you told me to spray down and wipe down and clean things, I really wouldn't know what you're talking about. I don't understand the principle of wiping it down.
I don't think you've ever done that. I don't mean that as an insult. I just mean I don't actually know.
I'm still not even sure scientifically if it works. But after everybody goes to bed, I like, you know, putting stuff away that's out, like putting large objects, books and other things that are scattered about.
No, and that's a gift to me. So then the next morning I can vacuum. You know, like it's just much easier if things are put away.
And that's a chore, but I think each of us has like the man is a spiritual leader, but the woman is you know, trusted confidant and they, you know, grow together with
each
other.
But I will say the most masculine men and the most feminine women that I know don't focus on femininity and masculinity all the time.
They're just fine.
They're just naturally service oriented, good people who know how to do things around the house that they enjoy. But like my Uncle Ed is the most masculine man that I know and he sews curtains, you know, but he also built his entire house with his hands.
He literally built the whole house. Yeah.
So, I mean, he's so masculine, but he serves his wife every single day. And so I think they're just genuinely service oriented people that fall into their natural nurturing or protective roles.
Yeah. Well, you have nurtured this conversation to its conclusion. This was fun. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Oh, thank you. Sorry if I sounded tired.
That's okay. I'm tired
too.
Because
I'm dead inside.
I'm so tired, but I love our little kiddos and everyone's asleep. Whenever it's so weird, everyone's asleep. I'll look at pictures of them on my phone when I'm like, I guess I could just go in their room and look at them.
Totally.
But it's still kind of fun. Although it's kind of fun to go back and look at the older pictures of them. Because I think especially if you're like grumpy with your child, like if they were disobedient or something happens, a quick cure for that is you look at a picture of them from like 5 years ago and you're
they're
like,
they're so little.
You're like, you're tiny. What was I thinking?
And then they interrupt you and you're like, stop. Look
at pictures of you already on my phone.
To make me hate you less.
Totally. No, I love those little goobers.
Just kidding.
They're
great. They're the best.
And it's been great. It's been a very blessed 10 years. Here's to another 10 years. Amen.
Amen.
The end.
Hopefully.
The end.
We'll see.
Thank you all. I hope you all have a very blessed weekend.
Also, I love you.
Love you too.
If you liked today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.